Welcome to Enabled, the weekly program about people just like you who are dealing with issues of vision loss. The program is designed to encourage you through news you can use, inspirational stories, and interviews. I'm Nancy Zimmer, your host for Enabled. Thank you for joining me. Emergency situations can be created by natural causes, by technological issues, or even by our fellow human beings. In any case, it would be prudent if you were prepared in the best way possible. Think about it ahead of time and make some plans. This emergency planning information comes from the Oklahoma State Department of Health. It has some good ideas for everyone, especially those who have a visual disability. The title of the pamphlet is Emergency Preparedness Guide for People Who Are Blind or Have Low Vision. It's produced, as I said, by the Oklahoma State Department of Health. Introduction to the piece says people are less likely to have problems in either large or small emergencies if they are prepared. A power outage in a selected area is considered a small emergency. Large emergencies affect a wide area, overload emergency services, and may mean that you have to be self-sufficient for a week or more. The systems that people rely on may not work in major disasters. The situation can be more difficult for people with disabilities and activity limitations. For example, the ability to reach exits, gather up personal items, and access emergency supplies should be part of your disaster preparedness planning. People who have low vision or who are blind can have problems when utility companies are down or overloaded during natural, human-caused, or technological disasters. To help reinforce the importance of planning for functional needs, people who are blind or have low vision, the Oklahoma State Department of Health is providing this document to assist during the planning process. This emergency planning preparedness planning tool is intended to help individuals that have low vision or are blind become better prepared. Common emergency situations include human-caused, natural, like floods, tornadoes, wildfires, and winter storms. And then there are those technological situations, namely power outages. There are a number of simple things that a blind person or a person with low vision can do to prepare for an emergency. You can create, first thing, probably most important, create a disaster plan. Meet with your family, friends, neighbors, coworkers, or any kind of a support group to discuss and plan for disasters that might occur in your area. Be sure you discuss the types of disasters that are most likely to happen, and then explain what to do in each case. You should pick two places to meet: outside your home in case of a sudden emergency like a fire, and then another important part, outside your neighborhood in case you cannot return home. Everyone in your group must know the address and telephone number for emergency backup. Another thing you should do in your plan is ask an out-of-state friend or relative to be your backup contact. After a disaster, it's often easier to call long distance. Other contacts should call this person and tell them where they are and where you are for exchange of essential information. Everyone must know your contact's phone number. And then discuss what to do in an evacuation. Plan how to take care of your service animal or your pet. The next section is suggesting that you assemble a go bag. This would include basic necessities for 3 days or 72 hours. Many of the items are things that you probably have already around your home. Consider marking emergency supplies with large print, tactile, fluorescent tape, or braille. This bag is used for all hazard preparedness. If you have a fire, you leave as quickly as possible, even with or without your go bag. And when I read this, I thought go bag might be like a little tote bag like you take to the store to put your groceries in. I think the more I read, the more your go bag should be more like a suitcase that has wheels. This is what they suggest for your go bag list: 3 days' supply of water. And this would mean 3 gallons of water per person. 3 days' supply of non-perishable food. And they suggest things like boxed or canned juices, candy bars, canned, ready-to-eat foods that don't require a can opener, or take a can opener. You might also consider packing cereal, crackers, granola bars, trail mix, or nuts, and a manual can opener if you need it. Also think about packing peanut butter. And also any service animal or pet items if they're needed, namely the pet's food, toys, or water. And a note at this point, be aware of the salt content of the food that you pack. This has a side effect of making you thirsty. Also, check and rotate your food every 6 months. They're also suggesting for your go bag that you pack a battery-operated or a crank-operated radio. And don't forget extra batteries. You know, I have one of those crank-operated radios, and it's really neat. You sit there, it's a small, like a large lantern size, and you whirl the crank around and you can get the radio to talk to you. Or mine has a built-in flashlight as well. So as long as you can keep turning the handle, you do get radio announcements or light. Also, they suggest you pack a flashlight and plastic emergency whistle and other emergency alert items. Even among people with visual disabilities or people with low vision, having a flashlight is very important for emergency preparedness. The flashlight can provide visual assistance, and the whistle can provide another audio clue for emergency location during the disaster. The human voice can only shout at the highest volume for about 4 minutes. And the flashlight can also assist a person that's following you during the emergency situation. A white distress cloth and glow sticks can also be seen by first responders. In this case, they're pointing out that not only do you need to see to get out of a situation, but it's good if other people can see you. So keep that in mind. I like the idea of a white distress cloth. That would be easy to pack and lightweight. You can always, if you have a spot to hang it out the window or wave it in the air, they could spot you. Glow sticks, good idea. They're also suggesting that you create a first aid kit and make sure that you are familiar with the contents and where they are located within the kit. Consider adding a blanket, pillow, and plastic bags to the kit for personal use during times of disaster. Another thing to pack, toiletries and a change of clothing. These can include items as simple as a toothbrush, toothpaste, hairbrush, toilet paper, and garbage bags with ties. Clothing should reflect the season. Change the clothing selection when the season changes for appropriate weight and comfort. And this might be a good idea. Way back a little while ago, they suggested that you change your food or you check your food every 6 months. So I can see how this would be a good thing to do when you change your clothing. Like in the first part of late part of spring, early summer, change the clothing in your go bag and then check on the food. And then later in the fall, end of September, early October, change the clothing to prepare for winter and check on the food. Another thing you should consider for your go bag, prescriptions and any assistive devices that you need. Make sure you have the medication name, dosage, the number of times you take the medication, and the contact information for the doctor. Also include prescription eyewear, non-prescription hearing aids, and communication devices. Stress to everyone that these items are assistive devices and not just baggage. A quick and efficient way to have the correct medical information is to use the extra labels that are provided by your pharmacist. The next thing they suggest is to pack a white cane in your go bag. Even if you have usable vision or are a guide dog user, a white cane can be essential for mobility to help maneuver around obstacles, to identify barriers, and to negotiate around other possible obstacles in a shelter. Another thing you should pack, work gloves and sturdy shoes. After auditory cues, touch is the most heavily relied upon sense for someone who has a visual disability. A pair of heavy work gloves and sturdy shoes can offer safety and security in exploring an unfamiliar environment while residing in a shelter. Also, you should pack in your go bag safety glasses. Safety glasses protect your eyes from falling objects or objects floating in the air during the disaster. Another thing for your go bag, your identification and important papers. Photocopy all important documents into a plastic bag or fireproof safe. Make sure all papers are in an accessible version for identification information. This may include the following: a photograph, identification card, Social Security card, health insurance or Medicaid or Medicare cards, home and auto insurance papers, deeds, bank account numbers, contact telephone numbers for your emergency contacts, and local emergency telephone numbers. I would suggest you also somehow make it secure, but take your passwords in case you have access to a computer down the road if you're away from your own desk. Another thing they suggest, bring cash, coins, credit cards, checkbook, and ATM card. However, cash and coins will always work during emergencies. The ATM card will not work during power outages. Keep that in mind. Next, in your go bag, about your service animal or your pet, make sure you have included food and water for your animal. And remember, they were suggesting 3 days or 72 hours for the supplies. Also include their bedding, their cage, their veterinarian contact information, and maybe a favorite toy. You should probably assemble a go bag for your service animal or pet for easy access in emergency situations. And you know, in my opinion, I think if your pet does have a cage or a carrying cage like mine does, you could pack all this stuff into that and just have the cage ready to go with all the emergency stuff inside. Maybe it might even pay you, if you're in a disaster-prone area, to buy an extra cage or get an extra cage for your animal. Keep with your go bag. Now, another suggestion that they're giving you, not for your go bag, this is for your home. Be sure your home is equipped with, or see if you can, equip your home with automatic fire sprinkler systems, or you can retrofit your residence with such protective devices as smoke alarms and fire alarms. And that brings us to another section of this pamphlet, safety equipment in your home for fire safety. The only thing a person that has a visual disability cannot do is see. Fire safety education is important for those with low vision or who are blind. He or she is capable of hearing an audible smoke alarm and crawling low on the ground to escape to safety during a fire. These steps are just a few that can save your life or your family's life in case of an emergency. Basic fire safety involves the following procedures. Before the fire, identify the nearest emergency exit, whether you are at home or elsewhere. You should always know the location of the nearest exit. Also, before the fire, install those smoke alarms. A working smoke alarm can make a vital difference in the event of a fire. It has the potential to reduce the risk of death in a fatal fire by 60%. Place alarms next to each sleeping area and on every floor of your home. You can also have a smoke alarm with a vibrating pad placed under your pillow as a safety device for fire alert. This would be especially important for people who are deaf or hard of hearing. Test your batteries monthly. And I think that advice might be changed, because the normal thing would be to check it in October during Fire Safety Month. That would be once a year. And then I know the latest smoke detector alarms that were installed in my home by my local fire department have batteries, they said, that last, oh gosh, something like 5 or 6 years. So it's still good to test your batteries, let's say, frequently. Pick a time, maybe your birthday, maybe New Year's Day. Pick a time, check your batteries. And then they tell you your local fire department can assist you in testing your smoke alarms and replacing your batteries. They do not charge for this public service. If your smoke alarms are hardwired, and that means if they're connected directly into the electric circuitry of your residence, make sure they also are equipped with battery backups, because, carrying that a little further, if the electricity goes out, your smoke alarm does not work unless it has battery backups. Next, this is if you're really planning ahead and before you even have a fire, try to live near an exit. If you are living in an apartment building or condominium, if you're moving to an apartment or new condo, try to get a unit on the ground floor. If this is not possible, know where the exit stairwell is located and how to get there. And plan to wait there for help if you also have a disability that prevents you from walking down those stairs. Have a designated person in your apartment building or your condominium area that will come assist you down the stairs as part of your general safety plan for all hazard preparation. Having a telephone near your bed within arm's reach along with emergency telephone numbers can assist you in emergency calling with your disaster planning. Now, a comment from me at this point, my own sort of foolishness, I carry my cell phone with me all the time, and I do have all the emergency numbers in there. My home phone has a nice new system set up. I realized I had not memorized any of the important numbers. I don't have them in my head, and I can't just say to the home phone, call my daughter, like my cell phone will do. So I wrapped a sheet of paper with all the important phone numbers on it, very small, wrapped it around the phone, and attached it just with a rubber band. So if I need to call anybody in emergency, I have those numbers in front of me, print copy. So think ahead about that. Next, they're saying to plan and practice escape plans. Know at least two exits from every room. Make sure you can unlock all your doors and windows. Make sure you can do it. Be sure you know how to open all of your windows. And practice this during your fire drills in your home. Next topic is about exit indicators for fire preparation. The confusion and disorientation of a fire in the home can be difficult to overcome. You may be forced to crawl along the floor to avoid smoke. It can be very disoriented to crawl where you're used to walking, especially if you count steps to locate doors or hallways. So it is recommended that you place tactile markers or security lights along the baseboard of the exit routes inside your home. These will help to identify where to go in case of a fire. And next, involve the fire department. Ask the fire department to help you plan an escape route and inform them of your functional needs. Sort of, if you have to, swallow your pride. Tell them what your problems are. They will keep track of that. And then if they respond to your home, they will know best how to help you. Ask the fire department for help in the identification of all hazards in your home and have them explain to you how to correct them. Learn the fire department's limitations and also make fire officials aware of your limitations. Next, if you should have a fire, during the fire, you've heard this before, I hope, get out and stay out. Leave your home as soon as possible. Do not try to gather your personal possessions. Your go bag should be stored by your door or right by your bed. But if your go bag is not handy during your exit from a fire in your home, leave it. Your life is more important than the go bag. Do not attempt to extinguish a large fire. And if you live in a building that has an elevator, do not use the elevator. Test the doors before opening them. Using the back of your hand, reach up high and touch the door, touch the doorknob, and then touch the space between the door and the frame. If anything feels hot, keep the door shut and use your second exit. If everything feels cool, open the door slowly and crawl out low to the ground if smoke is present. And another little saying that you should probably try to remember, the first one was what? Get out and stay out. This one is stay low and go. Stay low and go. Crawl and keep under the smoke if you can. If not, try to cover your mouth and avoid breathing toxic fumes and make your way to safety as quickly as possible. And what to do if you become trapped? Close all the doors between you and the fire. Stuff the cracks in the doors and cover all vents with a damp cloth to the best of your ability to keep smoke out. If possible, call the fire department and tell them where you are located within the house. Signal the first responders from a window with a flashlight, a whistle, or that white cloth that we mentioned. These are things that you should keep with you for safety purposes. Call 911 on your cell telephone if you have one. And another little saying that you should remember, remember what the first one was? Get out and stay out. Second one, stay low and go. This one is one that all the kids know. Stop, drop, and roll. If any part of you catches fire, do not run or try to extinguish the flames with your hands. Cover your face with your hands, drop to the ground, roll over and over. If you have another disability preventing these actions, try to keep a flame-resistant blanket or rug nearby to smother any flames. So our three key phrases here, get out and stay out, stay low and go, and then stop, drop, and roll. So hopefully you didn't have a fire, but if you did, after the fire, contact all your friends and family to let them know you are okay. Many organizations can assist you in temporary housing in the event your home is damaged or destroyed. The Red Cross comes to my mind at this point. Secure your service animal or your pet for transportation to new housing. Contact your insurance agent to start the paperwork for filing claims on your personal items that may have been lost in the fire. Now we come to the general topic of environment. Become knowledgeable about your surroundings in the event of all emergencies that might occur in your area. Understand the 3-day, 74-hour rule of emergency preparedness. Being informed and prepared will help you in the development of your emergency plans. First of all, know your alternate transportation and pedestrian routes in your neighborhood and in your work environment. Secondly, know your exits in buildings that you are in, such as your office building, your apartment, your condominium, even your senior center and hotels. Know where the exits are. Have someone explain and demonstrate where the exits are located when you go to conferences or other schools or faith-based activities or any other social engagements. Ask for this kind of help. Where's the exit? How do I get out? What's on the other side of the exit door? Next, have a designated family contact or check-in person, preferably one who is out of state. Local telephone lines may be overwhelmed, but long-distance lines still may operate. Ensure that all family members know the telephone number of the contact person or have the number in their possession. Make sure the contact person does not have an unlisted telephone number in case you're forced to look up the telephone number. Another idea, create and implement a buddy system. Have a reliable designated driver for your home, school, work, or place of worship in case you need a ride during an emergency. And please note, 70% of all assistance after an emergency is made by neighbors, friends, or these other buddies that you might have set up. So create a buddy system, somebody who will look after you. Have means of retaining information to assist you with communication during an emergency. Cell phones have voice messages that can be recorded in advance for future reference, and this is ideal for emergency situations. Keep a copy of the local emergency numbers other than 911 easily available for your use. During an emergency, 911 will probably be overwhelmed with calls. Another idea, practice emergency plans and procedures with family, friends, and support network. This will ensure other people will know how to contact you and where you will be in case of emergency. Next, we come to the term shelter in place. Unfortunately, you may have heard this in regard to the many recent school shootings that we've had to endure. Shelter in place. This is the appropriate response, and it depends on the type of emergency. If you hear a warning signal, listen to local radio or television stations for further information. You'll be told what to do, including where to find the nearest shelter if you are away from your shelter-in-place location. If you're told to shelter in place, act quickly. Follow the instructions of local authorities, and the basic steps would include these. Enter your home immediately. Bring your children, pets, indoors with you. If your children are at school, do not try to go and bring them home unless you are told to do so. The school will shelter them. Next thing, close and lock all outside doors and windows. Locking may provide a tighter seal. I would say pull the drapes as well. Another idea, get your disaster supply go bag and make sure your radio is working. Call your emergency contact, your support group, and keep the telephone handy in case you need to report a life-threatening condition. Otherwise, stay off the telephone so that lines will be available for use by emergency responders. Next, if you're sheltering in place, keep listening to your radio or television until you are told that it's safe for you, or else you might be told to evacuate. But do not evacuate unless you're instructed to do so by local authorities. If you are at work or in another place, follow the directions and plans of the facility. Do not attempt to go home. Shelter in place. Evacuation. If you are told to evacuate, several types of disasters may force you to be evacuated from your home. If you are told to evacuate, by local officials. Listen carefully to instructions that are given and evacuate immediately if you're told to do so. Leave a voice message with your buddy, your friend, or a neighbor so that someone will know that you are waiting in your designated location. If you have time, grab your go bag. Make sure you include any last-minute items such as prescription medications that you might need. Wear appropriate clothing and sturdy shoes. Lock your door and ask your buddy, who might be a neighbor or your support group, to assist you in the evacuation of your home. When possible, have a buddy or strong support system close to your home for immediate evacuation. You can always meet the other members of your support group in your pre-designated area for pickup. Please be prepared to leave your home if your area is without electrical power or water for an extended period of time. Be prepared to leave if there's a chemical emergency affecting your area, or if flood water is rising, or if there happens to be a wildfire burning near your home. If your home has been severely damaged for any reason, or, bottom line, if local officials tell you to evacuate. And you should plan your escape. Know at least 2 exits from every room. If you use a walker, wheelchair, or cane, check all exits to be sure you can get through the doorways. This is not only for your home, but other places that you might be in. Another thing to do, make all necessary accommodations, such as providing exit ramps, and widen those doorways to facilitate an emergency escape if you need to do those things. And keep all exits clear of objects for safe evacuation. And don't forget about your animals as well, your service animal or your pets. If you need to evacuate, you can take your service animal with you to the shelter. Bring your go bag and your service animal's go bag for your stay in the shelter. So I would like to leave you at the end of this program with a quote, something for you to think about. By failing to prepare, you are preparing to fail. These are wise words from a wise man, our very own, frequently quoted Benjamin Franklin. Thank you for listening, and I hope you have a great week. You've been listening to Enabled, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. Our technical director is Maureen Rich, and I'm Nancy Zimmer. I hope you'll join me again next week for more updates and information and encouraging stories. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can listen to it at our website, wxxi.org.